Is everyone in resonance with our Supreme Beloved? Does everyone feel the fulfillment of being one with the Supreme Beauty and Love, and free of all traits of the false self? This is the state of Sat Yogis. This is the state that all must be in now to be able to function as the angelic support of the world during the increasing tribulations and cataclysms that are now exponentially augmenting. There must be those who remain in peace and who transmit the presence of God in the world so that all who seek that light, that station to attune to, will be able to feel it because the Satyogis are transmitting it with infinite power and clarity and coherence and unity and influencing the planetary morphic field to rise to that divine level of consciousness again. So I hope everyone is in that place of total peace in your hearts and silence in the minds. And constant attunement to the information being transmitted to us by the infinite intelligence guiding us through these times. This is the meaning of the Tao. If we are not attuned, we will not receive and understand the messages, external and internal, that we receive and that we perceive as a result of that heightened consciousness back to our original nature. So, I have come tonight to announce a new Book of the Month Club, and it's officially beginning this evening, and I'm going to introduce you to the book. I think and I hope we are done reading dry intellectual books that are wrong anyway. And even though it's useful to improve our critical thinking and our capacity to use language in very subtle ways to express ideas that the ordinary self cannot grasp, the ordinary ego self, being at too primitive a level, cannot understand the messages, even of the soul, let alone of God. And if you are still translating that energy into words, into prayers, into guidance and inspiration, and knowledge of a symbolic nature, then the more accurately and coherently you are able to accomplish that translation, the more transformed the ego complex will be. So, my plan, and I hope you will agree with it, is to try to find books that resonate at the level of consciousness that we should all be at this moment. And then use those precious texts to contemplate and vibrate and stay with and integrate until that level of consciousness, it becomes our own again. And then we will start writing such poems and texts that will come from the same level and transmit that energy non-verbally in our presence and our auric field. So I found a top-of-the-line spiritual teacher in the Sufi tradition, whom I discovered back when we were reading A Soul in the Loaf of Bread. And some of you may have already found this book, but if you haven't, I consider this one of the most precious gems of the Sufi tradition, especially the early Sufi tradition, prior to Ibn Arabi and Rumi. And it's a book of poems, very small, as you can see. You'll easily read the book in a month, but do not speed read it, please. It's a book to read very slowly and to cherish and to nourish every poem. They are like haikus or very, very short love poems to God. And this author, his name is Sheikh Abu Sayyid Abil Kher, and I guess I'll spell that for you now. Abu Sayyid Abil Kher. He was born in 967 in the Western calendar and died in 1049, and lived in an area that's now called Turkmenistan in Central Asia. And he was one of many great Sufi sages who arose in that culture during that period. It was an extraordinary renaissance that went all the way through the period of Rumi and Shams, and is probably the golden age of Sufism. And this author is, from my perspective, unique in some ways. Even though all the Sufi mystical poetry, essentially, obviously, is giving the same message, but what I think is the extraordinary skill and the clarity of the heuristic intention of the poems is that the sheikh is teaching from each poem from a different level. He's leading the devotee up all the steps from the place of anguish and fallenness to the place where love becomes constant, to that culmination of the love in total union and annihilation of the ego and complete non-duality. And so the beauty of, and I would say, what's extraordinary about Abul-Khair is that he has a very wry sense of humor. And I think that's probably what attracts me to him a lot. And self-effacing humor, in which he declares very humbly and openly his own failings on the path, his own resistances and battles, and his own nuanced love of the beloved, in which he feels both the anguish of separation and the ecstasy of union, sometimes simultaneously. And he is able to recognize the very subtle errors that the ego is making in failing to remove the veils that are most difficult to perceive that they are veils. And these poems remove them for you. So if you read them with that intention, they will definitely accelerate your own liberation. The Sufi approach, similarly to the Kashmir Shaivite sages and even the classic Advaitins like Shankara, fascinatingly taught a double path. And that path is the path of simultaneous bhakti and jnana, the devotion to God and the realization of God as the self. But a realization that comes through first the feeling of one's love for God, a love that allows one to let go of everything human and phenomenal as worthless and leave it behind easily, because the glory of God's presence is so great you wouldn't want to divert your attention anywhere else, but also feeling God's love for the individual. And it's this stereophonic love that we offer to God and we receive from God that creates a unified current of energy that becomes so powerful it cannot be broken. Just as Sri Ramana often says, jnana and bhakti are one, but Ramana emphasizes atma-vichara, whereas the Sufi path is a path of surrender, and then through the annihilation of the one who is surrendering, that realization of Paramatman, Allah, becomes complete and full and all that remains. But the love must be authentic and genuine and must be so powerful that it overrides all other concerns, all other values, all other desires, and enables the attention to focus on the presence of God within at such a deep level that one is touched by the ecstatic power of that presence that is undeniable. And it's no longer a matter of faith. It's no longer a matter of belief. It's no longer a matter of hope and of a separation that seems endless, but a union that has always been there and that has only been forgotten. temporarily and once remembered again can never be forgotten. This is the state we must be in now. And so Abu Sa'id is, I think, a perfect teacher for this moment. The name of the book, which comes from one of his poems, is Nobody, Son of Nobody, which I think expresses, in a nutshell, the whole message, because that's everyone's name. And everyone is without body, and we are children of the bodiless infinite self. These were translated by the same man, Vrajay Abramian, who translated The Soul in the Loaf of Bread and many other Sufi mystics. So I'll read a few tonight, and probably during the month I will read a few more while you're reading it, and try to help you go as deeply as possible into each one, which I recommend you read a number of times and read the whole book two or three times, because you'll get much deeper significance from these apparently very simple poems each time that you contemplate them. And some of them you may think when you read it the first time, well, this isn't right, or it's not quite an accurate description of the this inner state. But if you really stay with an open heart and mind with that as a koan, you will recognize that there's a deeper paradox that is being pointed to that will enable you to unlock some aspect of your consciousness that has not recognized that underneath the conscious level of your state, there's an unconscious controller, if you will, that is trying to suppress the awareness of this internal contradiction so that you cannot penetrate below it. And when you do, you find infinite depths of wisdom that were hidden but always present. So the poem that the title was taken from, Under This Cloak, meaning the body, under this cloak is nothing but God. Introduce me as nobody, son of nobody. Remember to seek the beloved without the aid of reasoning. One's own intellect cannot be used to comprehend that of one's creator. This is why the mind must be silenced, because our human level thoughts are the veil that separate us from the God self. The introduction has some stories, including a story of a devotee who was treated in a way you'll be very glad you're not being treated, but turns out to be effective. I don't think that was his general approach to teaching, but it's one that's reveals the depth of sincerity and determination that we must have on this path. So I'll read a few, and interestingly, they do tend to become more advanced and more subtle as the book proceeds. Even though once you get to those, you'll go back and see the same depth in all of them. So it begins at the level of prayer to someone who is in that mode of still approaching Allah as another and is still resisting with the ego mind. If you are in prayers in Mecca, but your heart is elsewhere, you might as well be in an idol worshipper's temple. If your heart is with the Beloved, you can spend your life in his wine shop and be merry. So there's no need of austere practices and all of that once the love has been ignited and the flame is fully lit, then everything happens effortlessly. And you become drunken with divine love. Though burning has become an old habit for this heart, I dare not think of your company. What would a moth mean to the fire that burns worlds? We are about to meet the fire that burns worlds very directly when this world burns, so that a new world can flourish. But realize the humility of recognizing that each of us is a tiny fractal fragment of the infinite self. And with total humility and reverence, we must approach God and not be too quick to think God is the self, because then the ego will aggrandize itself, appropriate that signifier, and never reach the real self. Beloved, show me the way out of this prison. Make me needless of both worlds. Pray, erase from this mind all that is not you. Have mercy, beloved. Though I am nothing but forgetfulness, you are the essence of forgiveness. Make me needless of all but you. So some of these are advice and dharma, some are prayers. And some are very personal revelations of points in the journey in which subtle errors are revealed as such, when before that they might have been perceived as virtues. Here's one where I think he shows his humorous side. Nothing but burning sobs and tears tonight. No way out and no patience left. Last night our hearts had a moment together. I suppose this is how I have to pay for it. And I'm sure we've all been through that, because the ego will backlash as soon as you have a moment of joy, of the feeling of God's presence, then the ego will try to break it. And therefore, he says in the next one, do not seek stability here. Seek no rewards. You'll be here a day or five. seek to break no heart. That's the Dharma. We're here to heal hearts, not to break them. But it may require breaking egos. Are people finding the value in these? Yeah. I hope so. Detached you are, even from being. And this being is nothing but you. Unmanifest. Yet the manifest is naught but your shadow. Moons, galaxies, and worlds have drunk from this cup, but the cupbearer is nowhere to be seen. The deeper your involvement here, the harsher your pain and suffering. Very important teaching. Donkeys with colorful ornaments and loud bells are being groomed for the heaviest loads. You don't want the heaviest loads of karma to have to remove. I think the point is clear enough. I'll just read a few more. Those who seek annihilation in the beloved and poverty in life have no need of religion or knowledge or intellect. They do not even exist. Only the beloved remains. This is what the verse, "The poor have him only," means. We must become that poor voluntarily to be that rich spiritually. My beloved, this torture and pain I suffer because I am so addicted to your beauty. People ask me whether I prefer your company to being in heaven. Heedless fools. What would heaven itself mean without your presence? Love came and emptied me of self. Every vein and every pore made into a container to be filled by the beloved. Of me, only a name is left. The rest is you, my friend. My beloved. Are all of us in that state? Is our love for God that strong? It's hard not to read them all to you tonight, but I'm going to keep going and give you a few more to show you that some of the range of his expression. When destruction appears in the six directions, when all is being annihilated, your love-tamed heart will be the measure of your worth. Okay, are you taming your heart to be only attuned to God's love? Work on your love. Be a real human while there's still time. On the day of reckoning, only this will count. We are near the day of reckoning. So this poem is highly relevant, as I'm sure you know. unless you turn your back to the world and close this shell of your heart, which the ego is, take that away. The pearl of understanding will not materialize within you. Your head is your begging bowl. It can't be filled with the beloved's alms if it is full of itself and turned upside down. He talks straight. Okay, I'm going to tear myself away from some of these. Okay, here's a very essential one. The essence of happiness, you will know when you discard all you hold dear. Okay? That's the secret. Now, to the ego, that makes no sense at all, does it? And yet, that's the portal to the beloved. The essence of happiness you will know when you discard all you hold dear. Two beloveds in one heart will not reside together. If you want the true one, cross out the false. I'm going to read just a few more, and then I'm going to open the floor. Let's see. I missed the one I wanted to show you. Okay, there was one that I thought was most useful, but I'll read that in another class when I locate that one again. This one I enjoyed. To be in this imperfect existence for a moment and to dream of your eternal perfection, to have this heart full of wretched limitations, and to harbor this infinite pain of separation and longing in it. Your favors, beloved, all your favors. Nobody's laughing, but you know, we have to go through that separation and that pain. The problem is most of us don't feel the pain of separation from God deep enough. So, I am going to let go of my desire to find something that I specifically wanted to read. But that means I wasn't supposed to read it, so I am surrendered. Okay, I'll read one more. This isn't the one I was looking for, but it's exquisite. The world to come worries me not, neither does death. Why fear a true creditor? What is to fear most is our worship of this false self. Are you heretics or do you belong to God? So I'll open the floor and ask you, are you moved by these? Do they impact you? Do they help you open your heart? Do they have any... Do they give a sense of the depth of the level of consciousness he has reached? And it is our true nature. But feel free to say anything you wish. Are you wanting people to go to the mic for that? I don't, no, it's fine with me. I just have a feeling nobody's going to go up there. We'll find out.
I'll ask a question, if I may.
Ah, okay, start it off.
Thank you, first of all. This is a beautiful, beautiful surprise. I'm very, I'm looking forward to reading the book, and I always appreciate when you share poetry with us. Just such an exquisite beauty of bringing forth the poetry. I was particularly touched by, or I was touched by all of them, but the one on prayer in particular, because it feels like that's where I'm at right now.
And in prayer, Mecca, but thinking of somewhere else?
Well, yeah, I mean, no, well, I guess, if you say so, how can I say no? But the feeling of of asking God to empty out everything that is not him, and the feeling that it's impossible in the mind, and praying that God may, by his grace, empty that mind until there's nothing left but love for him. And in that poem, he mentions two worlds.
Mm.
Which are those two worlds?
Well, I think he's referring to the world of the bardo state you go into after death, if you're still in the ego at death, and the current phenomenal plane. I don't think he's referring to Satyuga in this. But I think he's referring to the afterlife of the ego, not the transcendence into the supreme light.
Thank you.
Because that's not a world.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But just to reply to your question of the impossibility of doing it with your mind, yes, that's what he's saying. You can only do it with your heart. It has to be love. If it's not love and it's just thought, no, you won't be able to stay with it. The thoughts will take you elsewhere and you'll be out of Mecca in no time.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that insistence on the heart, because it really feels like, coming back into the heart and processing everything through the heart, but a purified heart, not a schmaltzy heart.
The problem is that for the ego, it's even more difficult to be in the heart than in the mind, because the heart has been defended and closed, and most of our love has been suppressed and repressed from our conscious mind. So to be able to access the real heart, not the sentiment and, the feeling function, that's not the heart, but the actual core of our being, if you can feel that, because it is love, you're already liberated. So even though it should be much easier to do it simply through the heart, it's more that the focus on the heart, which is silent and doesn't use words, will bring one's attention away from that stream of signifiers into at least a level of investigation of what do I feel, and what is my heart expressing? And by feeling the resistances and levels of anger and hatred and right revenge and all the things that have built up in the ego through its traumatic childhood, etc., have to be gone through and released to find one's heart. And without living in the heart, you're not living at all. So we have to do this for ourselves, not simply to reach God, but to feel any kind of peace and of goodness within our own being. And so at a certain point when one recognizes the impurity that must be removed, it becomes the urgent matter that cannot be put off. And then that's when it happens.
So thank you so much.
Namaste.
Hi.
Thank you. I'm very excited about this book. I feel affected on many levels. And I really look forward to dive deeper into it. And you just spoke a lot about the heart, and maybe you already responded to my question, but I was touched by the sentence that said we had to tame the heart, because for me that's exactly what you spoke about as well, like a contradiction to what I feel the process is, like that the heart is dead and needs to be coming alive, mm-hmm. whereas taming for me is like closing, like controlling something that is mm-hmm. already like wild in the wrong way. So I was wondering if you could. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a false belief that your heart is dead. That's impossible. Mm-hmm. But you have anesthetized yourself to its love. It got suppressed because you were born into perhaps a loveless family system, you know, which was more controlling and pain-causing and interested only in controlling you. And so that got internalized. And in a way, you were given the implicit command to bury your heart and to try to live in a state where you could not have to feel how much pain that you were in because you had to do that. And the ego is the split between mind and heart, so that every ego is in the, you know, the ghetto of the mind, and cannot know its outback and its inner beauty, because others would be threatened by it, and you would be sovereign and uncontrollable by others. Because you would be one with God. And so the deliberate intention of the social order that then gets communicated to the family system to enforce it is that all of us should be cut off and that we should be so weakened because of not having access to the heart's power that all we can do is stay in that state of pain and self-hatred, because that's all the only thing that keeps us feeling alive, like we can control something, right? But it's not real life. And so a point comes when that's intolerable to live in the ego anymore, because it is a prison and a torture chamber, and it's easy to escape now. You don't have parents stopping you and, controlling you in the way they did. And you're free to know yourself, your God self, fully, and discard the ego programming that they forced on you. So let go of the false self completely and know your real self. It is your heart.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Namaste, Shunya. a beautiful surprise. I look forward very much to reading these poems and to discuss them together with the Sangha and you. The sentence that you said in introducing the book of being of that we might hear in these poems the anguish of separation mm-hmm. and the ecstasy of union mm-hmm. in the same poem, which mm-hmm. I felt in, mm-hmm. in some of them. I wanted to ask you to talk a little bit more about that, because there is this the anguish of separation, I feel, you know, is the story of the ego and that it believes in that story of separation, and I can't say that I have felt the ecstasy of the union, but something perhaps a little thread of that, I'm not sure, but that sentence, in that phrase of be a true human in one of those poems, mm-hmm. it feels like a paradox of that is where the sense of separation is, perhaps sometimes in being a true human and forgetting that really, we're truly just always united.
No, I don't agree with that. When we're true humans, we are also one with God, because the human and the God are one. That's the teaching of all religion. But if you're an animal masquerading as a human, or you're in some demonic state masquerading as a human, then there's a problem. And every ego has now its demonic tendencies. In other words, its anti-God tendencies and its cynicism and hatred of love, hatred of truth, hatred of God, if there's even any belief, and a sense of the meaninglessness of existence. So we've been indoctrinated into becoming false humans. And that's why we have lost our power to resist evil and to even recognize it, because we have it so much within. So the state that he's talking about, which I refer to as a kind of stereophonic love, is that when you feel that separation and you no longer can tolerate being separated, you're choking, you're dying because of not being connected to the source of eternal life and love and joy, then you break through all the defenses and your love of God connects you, and then you feel the grace. But even while you're in the process of doing that, there's still veils of separation, but the love is already penetrating through them in both directions. And so the veils get thinner and thinner, and there's more and more closeness, less and less fall and feeling of separation, until all the veils are gone and union with the beloved is achieved. So keeping both levels is very important, keeping them both conscious and recognizing that the self you are separated from and loving is yourself. It's not another. It's your own self. And that by accepting that you love yourself, because the ego doesn't, love yourself, then that self can emerge from behind all those veils and connect with you. But because you can't love your personal self and you can only project love on a self that's not you beyond, which is why you don't feel the ecstasy, in that separation and longing, it pulls that projected image of the self and its power back into your body, so that then your heart opens and shines with that blissful presence, and then the dual nature becomes one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Namaste. I'm like overcome with emotion today. It felt like I was just fully in my mind, and walking up here, I was just witnessing the narratives that were playing out, and I see you sitting there, and I'm listening to the poems, and just tears are flowing, like, A, because of how beautiful the poetry is, but also because it's resonating with what's true in my heart. Mm. And just extending, like, utmost gratitude, because it's like a, feels like a breath of fresh air, like returning back to what's true, and like how insanely ugly, like, the false is and how much we believe it. Like, that's what I've been contemplating lately, is how much I believe these false narratives in my mind, and like they're such an illusion. Just, I found, and again, it's just being reiterated in tonight, how much poetry connects me back to the divine and back to my heart. And so I wanted to extend my utmost gratitude. But also, in reading The Soul and the Loaf of Bread and finding a lot of, like, solace in my heart to that, Abul Hassan says, like, please, beloved, please show me to myself what I look like. And the beloved shows him, like, this discarded, like, ugly, barely, like, worth a second glance self. And he goes, this is you. And, like, Abul Hassan is like, are you sure? Like, what do you mean? This can't be me. Like, what about all my prayers and all my worship and all my bhakti? And God goes, all of that is me. And it's like, everything but, like, authentic devotion and love is like the ego. Mm-hmm. And and then there was this other one with heaven and hell. It's like the lovers sighed because both heaven and hell, like, burned. And when I first read it, I was like, why are they crying? Like, heaven is so beautiful. And like, it took me multiple reads to understand, like, heaven and hell are both the illusion. Like, once they both burn to hell, it's all the beloved. And like, it's this, not a sighing out of crying, it's a sighing out of love. Like, thank goodness that the illusion is falling away. So it was just, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All the narratives that are in the ego mind were imposed in you, on you and in you, by the parents, and then the social order, and in schools, etc. They're not your mind. They're not your narrative. It's your superego putting you down. And it's the other, the internalized other, masquerading as you, because it says the word I am this, I am that. No, all those images of being, the discarded one and all of that, those are false, and the one telling you that is not the real God. That's a superego imposter as well. So you mustn't believe any of those narratives, and recognize that you've been hypnotized by believing that the narratives are your own mind speaking, when it's not. It's an enemy within that is there to make you feel small and low and controllable. And you have to break free of that. And then you'll hear the voice of God, the real self, that will boom out with great power and bliss and change the world.
Okay.
Namaste.
I think I'm ready for this book.
All right.
There was a resonance I felt of that outspoken love for God, and as you were just expressing in this particular conditioning of the ego, it was heretic. You would be a heretic to speak of such love, and or to read it. So I felt a real call for that outspokenness of the truth, love of the heart, knowing to come out. Mm-hmm. And also, as you were reading, felt further revolutions being stirred up, mm-hmm. a heart's revolution of, having the courage to speak to the point where I feel, where it is my reality, mm-hmm. and it's okay. And why wouldn't it be okay to speak about walking around and feeling angels all around, and that God is has in store or has ordained this, and out of not just of the nobody, but of nowhere, out of nowhere. And it was not something that the ego narrativized about. And I feel a real heart opening and encouraged to come out of the closet.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. That's wonderful. So the reason why it has been difficult so far, of course, is because there's still a trace of belief that you have a body. You're not nobody, right? And you're not son of nobody. You're son of somebody in Portugal. And that somebody and those somebodies don't want you to be an angel and a goddess, because it's threatening, right, to their control. So that internalized set of wardens are going to resist as long as there's any identification with body. And so there has to be a total break free from the belief you were ever born.
Yes, indeed. So I was wondering also on that note, why so recently there is this perception of angelic presence. That's not, so much external, it just is.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there a shift from...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the soul is coming in. You have made a huge amount of inner work and removed a lot of the veils and defenses and superego attacking energies. So you've done most of... So I do think now you're ready to fully receive your real self and not be shattered by it, because you're still identified with a small little mm-hmm. vessel that can't hold the infinite. But I think you're already in those stages of resonance with the soul that you are able to receive God in total joy without any fear, mm-hmm. and without any sense of being torn apart, mm-hmm. by being expanded to infinity.
So the practice that you would recommend at this point for the full disidentification from body that will always come with the wardens?
Realize you are love. Because what is love? It's not a body, right? Mm-hmm. And where is love? You can't localize it. So once you realize that's what I am, is love,
yeah.
And then you're free.
Haji, thank you.
I'm going to make one more try to find the one I wanted to read while someone will come up. Or maybe no one will come up. Well, you will probably have to find it yourself, the one that you think I resonated with the most. You'll probably recognize it. But I felt it was a beautiful removal of what may well have been the, for him, the final veil. No, I don't think I'm going to find it tonight, so I will accept that we save it as the coup de grace in the next meeting. And approximately a month from now, but who knows, maybe sooner, and if everyone is ready sooner, we'll go over the poems again. And perhaps in different teachings this month, I'll choose different poems to lead off with, to as kind of epigrams to focus on the points that he's recognizing as crucial. Please.
Thank you. Thank you for the readings, and I wanted to talk about attachments. This is leave all attachments. And I understand that on the highest level, like you're leaving this world without anything. But there are things along the way that I feel bring me to a more of a silent mind or a more peaceful state, and I find them useful in a way.
Like what?
Well, like maybe music playing or mm-hmm. creative aspects that take me away from a chattering mind.
Yeah, I don't think those are attachments.
Okay.
No, no. An artistic practice, mm-hmm. as long as it's not egoistic, you know, so that one wants to shine and impress people on that level. If it's done as a way of bringing the music of God's love and replicating it in sound. That's really what music is about. Translating those vibrations and those energies and messages and the heart's movement closer and closer to God. To me, that's what great music expresses. And so if your intention of using music as devotion, that's not attachment. That's a beautiful act of self-offering. Mm.
Okay, thank you. That mm-hmm. helps a lot.
Thank you. I feel like I could comment on all of them. They're all so beautiful, but the one that I chose, I think I got it. I should know how to work it by now. The one that I chose was the one about the head being a begging bowl that's both full and also turned over. Mm-hmm. When I was reading through my notes, I thought it's actually the opposite of what you were speaking about in the beginning, about attuning to the infinite intelligence and downloading all of the information. It's the exact opposite. And a question that I had when you said that is, what exactly are we downloading in those moments? But also, you said something about it becoming so powerful that there's no return from that. And my eternal question is how? How does it become so powerful that there's no return to the overturned full mind?
Well, if there is a true resonance with the power of God, Almighty God, and that power is received as truth, then all the lies of the ego are completely refuted and eliminated at once. All of them, including your existence. And when you feel that total love of God, there is no one left but God's love that is God's essence that you are. And so there's no question of how does one do it. That's the power of grace. And that's what the ego is terrified of, mm-hmm. being overwhelmed and destroyed by truth and love simultaneously.
So how do you get over that terror?
It's interesting because as long as you're in the ego level, there has to be the cultivation of a yearning to know the infinite, because you recognize the limitations of the event horizon of your own mind. Once you see that your own mind is only seeing a world that's its own projections and its own shadow, and it cannot see the light, and it cannot see the light within, and it cannot feel the joy of what life should be, and its narratives are not truth, and what other people are telling you is mostly not truth, and there's a collusion in believing lies and believing in lower level unrealities that degrade the ego and distort the values to take away our integrity and our willpower and our loyalty to the good, to the pure, to the beautiful. And if we do not break that away, then we have disgraced ourselves. We have dishonored our being, and we have failed ourselves. And so there's a moment comes that the ego's dignity, even at that level, will not tolerate its self-betrayal any longer.
Mm. In a way, it sounds like but it's a matter of love for God, as you keep saying, and will, right? Just the will to not go back into the habit of disgracing oneself, really, and courage.
Yes, but you see, at first you won't have the will to do that. But what you will have the will to do is to witness your ego betraying you. And the more and more you witness it without identifying with that betrayal and enjoying its jouissance and its hubris, its arrogance, the more that you witness it and say, that's not me, and I refuse to be that anymore. That's all you can do. And then you turn away from the ego and its narratives, and you want to know what is real. Mm-hmm. Who am I beyond that? And that's when the power comes.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. You've survived another one, I hope. And I wish you blessings for your instant blissful liberation, and soon you'll be writing poems now that are at the same level of beauty and of revelation as this great master. So I hope that you will really use these, meditate on them. Suck the nectar out of them, because they have a lot in them. And the energy of these words themselves can generate a higher vibrational frequency that will enable the attunement to the beloved to become real, to become an ecstatic presence. You'll suddenly feel you're on some drug that's better than anyone you ever had. And that fills you with light and with a kind of ineffable joy and of separation from pain and suffering and the whole phenomenal world and an openness to a higher dimension of reality that will become so potent as you pay attention to it and give yourself to it, that the ego will be washed away forever in no time at all. So blessings for instant liberation into truth and love. Namaste. The book is online, and I'm sure we can get it printed for everyone soon. And I hope everyone enjoys it fully. When we do read it again, I hope everyone will at least pick one and read it aloud, the one that really moved you the most. so we can get a bouquet of poetry to have the joy of hearing again and falling in love with or rising in love with. Namaste.